Welcome to Head Over Feels, the podcast where we discuss matters of the heart while also using our heads, blending emotional awareness with intellectual relationship skills.
We promise raw, real, and sometimes ridiculous advice on love, sex, and relationships.
I'm Megan Sundra.
And I'm Fernando DV. We're here to tag team you with juicy insights, tantalizing tools, and sometimes embarrassing anecdotes in order to help you have the best love life ever.
This week, we'll be answering questions about changing your last name, a foursome disaster, a dateception, a large unpaid debt, and how to handle rejection.
The term dateception, which we'll go into when we get to the question.
Coined by Fernando himself.
Yeah, we were on a hike earlier today and talking about this. It's the concept that you don't know. It's a date within a date.
Yeah.
So it's just like playing off of Inception. And it's exactly that. And it'll make more sense when we read off the question. You're like, whoa, it does sound like a date within a date. And that's the trick, is that you don't know you're actually within a date. Are you in it or not?
Oh, my God.
That's a total mindfuck.
It truly is. I can't wait to talk about rejection. My ego is, like, steeling itself for the call-outs it's going to have, I'm sure. But we're going to soothe you guys a lot with it. It's truly how to handle rejection with grace and healthy attitude and make it easier on you. So I think there's a lot to look forward to there.
Yeah. We recently talked about how to have a graceful breakup. So having good rejection. We're preparing for you for life.
That's right. Guess what, listeners? There's now a special space for all of us to hang out and converse online. Our brand new Facebook group is called Rebel Hearts, Head Over Feels Podcast Community. It's a private place to discuss the show, share love and sex memes, participate in topic discussions, hear about podcast updates and special opportunities, and enjoy additional content from your hosts. Come join in the fun and let your freak flag fly. Again, this group is called Rebel Hearts, Head Over Feels Podcast Community. See you on the inside.
All right, so we're going to jump right into our questions. Mm. Let's do it. Mm-hmm. So the first question comes from Daniela, and she writes, "Hi, Fernando and Megan. I'm not sure how to deal with this issue, but it's very sensitive. I want to stand up for what I believe in, but I don't want to hurt anyone, although it feels like I already have. Okay, here's the situation. I recently got engaged to my boyfriend of 3 years, who is very supportive, loving, and we have a very healthy and equal relationship, although he is surprisingly traditional in some ways, particularly the issue of taking his last name when we get married. However, I think I'd really like to keep my maiden name, mainly because it would really mean a lot to me and my family, since I'll be completing my doctorate soon, and I'll be the first woman in my family to achieve that level of education. Plus, my family immigrated here from Colombia before I was born in order to give me the best life possible. My dad sacrificed so much for our family and for my success, and I want to show my gratitude and pride in my heritage and achievements. I always imagined myself as Dr. and redacted the last name for privacy since I was a little girl. So, I feel terrible that my husband seems insulted by this. He says it's tradition to take a husband's last name, and it shows a woman's devotion and commitment to him, and that she's starting a new and shared life with him. I do agree with those sentiments, and I'm very excited to be his wife and share the rest of my life with him, but we've argued about this so much that we've had to stop talking about it for a bit. How can I explain it better to him? Should I just take his last name and be proud I'm a doctor either way? Thanks, Daniela."
Man, I don't know if I'm qualified to talk about this topic. I have some really fucking strong feelings about this.
I do too, but Meg, lay it on.
In my own journey with my own surname. Well, okay, so I love that you're being so conscientious, mm-hmm. Daniela, and I think you're really good at communicating your perspective on this, and I don't know if your husband is fully hearing you. What it comes down to is you have the right to choose what your last name is going to be, whether it's the one you were given, whether someone hands you a new last name, or whether you completely make one up. It's entirely up to you, and it's legal to do. And we live in a world in 2020 especially in America, where the expectations aren't as strong as they used to be in terms of tradition and taking someone's last name. The historical origins of a woman taking a man's last name in a hetero monogamous relationship are a little dark. I mean, women were considered property and they were often, you know, paid for, right? Like dowries and things like that. And when a woman married a man, it was assumed that she was marrying into his family. She was like leaving her family. That's why her dad, quote unquote, gives her away at the wedding. And then she becomes a member of the new family. So taking the name of the family she's joining makes sense to show her unity within it. But nowadays, most people's marriages are a union of two adult equals whose families interact with each other, but no one is being given to another's family. Mm-hmm. You're starting a new family together with your spouse. And sure, you may end up closer with one family or the other for a variety of reasons, but you know, I've heard of couples who made up a completely new last name that both of them took when they got married. Mm-hmm. How fucking cool is that?
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's progressive as fuck.
Right? So I think it would be really, I mean, I'm just going to straight up give you advice. I think you should keep your given last name. Mm-hmm. If that's what it symbolizes so much to you, and that's so valid and important and meaningful. And, you know, I would try to communicate this as best you can to your husband. But man, what a feminist statement. What a cultural statement. What a sign of pride and heritage and achievement. And you fucking earned that, right? You have the right to, like, sing the history of where you come from through the achievements that you have earned over time today. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that your outward expression of pride of where you came from should be erased just because it means something to someone else, you know?
Yes.
Yeah. Like, yeah, you're still going to have your doctorate. That's true. And you're still, you know, you can honor your heritage in other ways, but I think the last name is a pretty symbolic thing. I don't think you should have to compromise on that.
No, I don't think so either. I wanted to pose the question, while it's tradition on his side, would he, if it's so important that you take his name, would he consider taking yours?
Ooh.
Because you can also keep his feelings in mind, but that's not, I don't think that should be a deciding factor. It's like, okay, I'll consider it, put in the suggestion box.
Yeah.
Which is actually the trash can.
Because respecting someone's feelings or taking them into consideration is not the same thing as changing your behavior because of someone else's feelings. Yeah, yeah,
exactly. So the arguments he's giving are, I'm going to say, yeah, it's incredibly sexist, disrespectful, and it's a bit oppressive. It's like he's saying, when he's saying that you're not willing to take his name, that you are not really committing to him, it sounds like he wants some sort of like outward like branding, like he owns you. Like you're not, like he's branding you with his name. He's like ownership of you. And, you know, it sounds like it's like his feelings about you not honoring this tradition. It's like, but what about your feelings? Mm-hmm. He's, you know, is he not also being disrespectful about for you for not considering your experience, for not wanting to change your name? Or does it not matter so much because you're a woman and in their tradition or whatever the fuck he's drawing from, it's, he's seeing it from like this cultural sexist standpoint that's just been passed on for so long. Mm-hmm. So, and you already listed, like, I think your reasons are absolutely valid. I would also side with Meg that it's not worth taking someone's name for this just for tradition, just to, you know, please these other people. This should be a discussion. This shouldn't be like a hard line in the sand. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I beg to differ that there may be other things. And, you know, if he's have his traditional approach in this regard, where other ways is he not like open to like equality in the relationship? Mm-hmm. And I worry that might show, that might rear its head later down the road, because it sounds like he's not really being willing to have any sort of compassion or even a discussion. It's like, if he doesn't have his way, you are dishonoring his family. And so,
yeah, you got to nip that in the bud. If this stuff may rear its head in different forms later on, that would be bad. And I'm not trying to paint your fiance as you know, with a broad brush as just like a bad backwards person. This may be a vestige, right, of the past, some hanger on of a thing maybe he never examined from a new perspective. Yeah. Maybe no one's ever challenged him on it.
Yeah.
So really letting him know the meaning for you is so important, while simultaneously letting him know how committed and in love and excited you are for this new life you're going to build with him. Mm-hmm. Can go a long way to reassure his doubts, because your name symbolizes something different to him than it does to you. Mm-hmm. So how else, and I would even ask him directly, how else can I show and tell my devotion to you, my love for you, my commitment to our marriage and our life together in ways that don't involve my name? Sure. You know, wearing a ring is one way that people outwardly show. Mm-hmm. Is there some piece of jewelry, another piece of jewelry you can wear, or any symbolic action that you can do that lets him know? And love languages come into play here. So is it, you know, acts of service or words of affirmation or physical affection in public might make him feel just like very appreciated by you all the time? It could be so many different things, or maybe picking a symbol that symbolizes you guys, sort of like a family crest, or just any kind of shape or symbol that means something to both of you or references a meaningful moment from your past. And then you can get like cheesy signboards or pillow covers made with that on it as like, you know, the emblem that symbolizes your relationship. Yeah. You could put it on like a cute little planter on your front porch, and like the world can see that thing, and that thing means us. Right?
Yeah. You could have got matching face tattoos or or tattoos of each other's names. Actually, I would not recommend either of those things.
No. I mean, you could get matching hidden tattoos, you know?
Don't tattoo each other's names on each other.
Subtle, pretty things.
Yeah. Like, something that's symbolic for both of you that may or may not be visible. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say it for the third time. Don't get each other's name tattooed, because... It always looks awkward when you have to explain why there's a blacked out piece in your arm.
Oh, shit. Hopefully your marriage lasts forever. We hope you don't have to cover these tattoos.
Don't be a statistic.
Yeah.
Yeah, this ultimately comes down to you absolutely have a right to declare why you don't want to change your name. And he has, you know, so you can both have differing views on it, but it sounds like both of you need to be heard. And I guess I'm hearing how you wrote about this, it sounds like he kind of gets to take up all the space around the conversation. And then when you bring up yours, it's like, it's not like it's considered. Mm. And I say that because if it were considered, then there'd be more of a discussion. Like, well, where can we meet in the middle? Or like Meg said, like, what are other ways that I can show devotion, commitment, et cetera, to you that don't involve changing my name? Mm. And... yeah, I think that's absolutely worth exploring. But I guess now that beckons a question, what if said husband isn't willing to budge on this? Mm. I say dump his ass, but I don't know. That's that becomes a bit difficult, because you have all this other stuff going with this person. And I think if this is a hard boundary important to you, I don't think it's worth compromising, because that will lead to resentment down the road.
Yes. And you'll be living inauthentically to your own values.
Yeah.
So if he makes a hard line in the sand and says, I will not marry you if you don't change your name for me, call him out and be like, okay, it sounds like you value the symbology of a name change more than you value having me in your life. Mm. Right?
Boom.
Because like, yeah, if he's like, I want you in my life no matter what, if I have to like dye my hair blue to have you in my life, I'll do it. If I have to move cities, I'll do it. Like, you know, people should be willing to make reasonable sacrifices to be with the person that they value so much that they want to be with their entire rest of their lives, that a name should be a minor detail, you know? And I know I'm projecting on this, that this means something to your fiance, I get it. But if it's a symbolic issue between you guys, find out what it symbolizes for each of you. And if there's a different symbol you can choose that means just as much, you get to create your own meaning. You know, our culture assigns meaning to certain things like names or rings or face tattoos. But you also get to change what that meaning means for you, or assign meaning to something that previously no longer had meaning before.
Yeah.
Right. So we hope it doesn't come a head-to-head battle, Daniela. We hope that you can find a mutually agreed upon a meaning that symbolizes the love and commitment you have together. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Our second letter comes from Carla, 26-year-old woman. So recently, my boyfriend of 7 months and I were at a small swingers party and ended up having a foursome with another couple we've been friends with for a while. It was super fun, but not exactly a planned out thing, as we were all drinking a bit and just kind of fell into it. The other couple has done some swinging over the past couple years, but my boyfriend and I are totally new to the open relationship concept. We hadn't acted on it yet, but had agreed we'd be open. And when the occasion came up, we both seemed pretty enthused about it. During the moment, I looked over at some point and I thought I saw my boyfriend having sex with the other girl without a condom on. And while we hadn't said that would be okay, I wasn't really upset as I trust this other couple a lot. I kind of saw it as permission to do the same, so I let the guy go without one with me. As a side note, I'd seen he was kind of struggling wearing the condom at first anyway, seemed pretty self-conscious and couldn't stay hard. I really wanted to have sex with him and thought this would make it easier for him and more enjoyable for me too. The next day, we all went out to brunch together and had planned to walk around the town a bit. Everyone was in good spirits except for my boyfriend, who was sulking a ton, being really distant and refusing to talk about anything except occasional statements and passive-aggressive comments. I was able to figure out he was mad I didn't use a condom with the guy because, as it turns out, he didn't have sex with her. It was just dark in there, and I'd misinterpreted him grinding, which really looked like sex. I apologized and said it was just a misunderstanding, but he didn't accept it and just shut down. It seems kind of hypocritical of him because I saw him definitely have unprotected oral with them, so it seemed like that was already a thing we were doing. His attitude kind of ruined the day, which I really wanted to be a bonding experience for all of us. The other couple kept high-fiving me, and it was so fun to have sexy energy still among the group, and I was hoping to be able to do it again with them soon. It felt like my boyfriend was being difficult for attention and just looking for something to be mad about to cover up for the fact that he didn't get to have sex or was just uncomfortable that we did something so different and new. I can understand he'd be a little shaken from having a foursome for the first time, but it feels like he's putting a wall between us for no reason when this could have been something that brought us closer together. It's been 2 weeks since then, and he's been really distant still and sometimes mean. What can I do to get him to relax about it and move on? I really love him, and I wanted us to be that kind of strong couple that can have swing, that can swing with others without freaking out. I know I shouldn't have gotten drunk or should have stuck with the condoms, but I honestly thought I had to go ahead in the moment. I don't think it's fair. Oh my God, egg, help. I don't think it's fair for it to be held against me forever.
Thanks for writing, Carla. That's sounds like a sticky situation.
Oh, this is a very convoluted situation. Mm-hmm. Let's unpack it.
Yeah. So sometimes, I mean, this sounds like this overall went pretty well to some degree, but sometimes the fantasy is better than the reality.
Truth.
So I think one thing that we can start looking at is, while foursomes, fivesomes, or however many sums can be sexy environments to play with, there seems to be, it sounds like there may have not been any sort of pre-agreed things communicated. Mm-hmm. And then you change the drinkings, sometimes inhibitions get lowered, and you're like, okay, you know, kind of go mm-hmm. with the flow a little bit more, the thing's a little loose. Certainly nothing wrong with that. Sounds like it was all consensual, but when it comes to new arrangements with partners or new situations, and especially with like multiple people, I think consent agreements and kind of just laying out all the kind of parameters is going to be super important. So that looking like talking with the other couple, all right, what's last time everyone's been tested for STIs? Mm-hmm. What are we agreeing upon as far as like safe sex practices? Like, are we okay? No one has tested positive for any STIs? So then, does that mean, are we going to use condoms? Are we for oral sex? Are we going to use condoms or like any contraceptives for penetrative sex? Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. Are we going to use toys? Mm-hmm. What are we okay with partner swapping?
Right.
What are, you know, basically as many details as you can cover that, so that way you understand, okay, so you know what you can work within and then kind of just enjoy from there. Mm-hmm. And that it doesn't have to stop and be like, hey, what'd you say about that thing about condoms again? Like, you know, in the middle of it, you're like, rather than you just have, you kind of have your front load with all the information. And if in doubt, just maybe just dial it back a little bit, especially if think there's a good connection there. Y'all will get the fuck again. So,
yeah. Right. There's more opportunities. It doesn't all have to happen now. Yes. Right.
Correct. Yeah. So I think by being able to front load all that, something like this could be avoided where it's like, okay, we didn't say anything about contraceptives, so I'm going to use one in case. And if this person's struggling with it, we might switch to something else. Mm-hmm. And then maybe we'll talk about, like, hey, like, I noticed you were struggling. You know, like, is there something you need from me so you can feel like, you know, involved or whatever? And I know for some people that they might feel a little more not using condoms, or some people refer to as fluid bonding, mm-hmm. can have a lot of significance to it. And mm-hmm. for some people, it's like, not so much.
Yeah.
That being said, that's, I think, especially when it comes to STI health and when you're involving multiple people, that's super important to delineate that. But so it sounds like, yeah, communication. And if you're unsure, I'm of the opinion that, yeah, maybe just take a notch down. Mm-hmm. Don't go that far. Or if it's not possible to get that clarity in the moment, which sometimes is not, mm-hmm. you know, if someone else has got their face full and, you know, or mouth full or something, then, you know, maybe not the best time to interrupt. You're just like, okay, I'm going to let them do the fun. Let's do something else, you know? And that way everyone can kind of like have a sexy, playful time.
Yeah, I think our culture gives us this assumption that foursomes or just any transgressive group sex or whatever kind of a situation must happen spontaneously and organically for it to be sexy and fun. And that assumption prevents us from doing our due diligence ahead of time and having an STI and boundaries conversation.
Yeah. Organic meaning no one communicates.
Yeah.
And just like, you just all read the room and you're like, okay, I see what they're saying. They're saying no condom right here. Got it.
Right? Like it's a fucking movie. And it just happens with like this soaring bounce music. Yeah. And like, yeah, everything just happened. Wasn't that fun and spontaneous? And like, oh my God. You know, so if you let it happen that way, which like, sure, maybe the stars align and everything works out okay and nobody talked about anything ahead of time, great, you dodged a bullet. But like, those are the minority of cases, I think. So I encourage people to have those conversations beforehand, and you can make them sexy. Trust me, you really can, you know, mix it while you're talking with a little bit of really light affectionate touch so that you're keeping this like physical sexy vibe going and, you know, kind of discussing what your desires are in this flirty way. Like, ooh, like something you get to do. It's a gift. It's exciting. Not like, okay, here's this list of hardline things. Like it doesn't have to be so dry, right?
Yeah, it doesn't have to be clinical at all.
No, yeah. Exactly. So, and then stopping if you're unsure, like Fernando said, oh my God. Yeah. Like, if you have to pause, sure, it can be awkward. It may interrupt the magic of the moment, quote unquote, whatever. But that's worth sacrificing for the greater good of everyone's health and comfort.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, maybe since you guys are really new at this, you didn't know that you were supposed to have boundary conversations and agreements and to stick to them, even if the moment feels like you want to do something else. That's why we make agreements, so that we don't get pulled in weird directions in the moment, in the heat of the moment, right? Yeah. So in the future, what you got to do with your partner, you say you value this guy, and I can hear that you didn't mean to hurt him, but you did. It's like when you step on someone's toes by accident, you don't say like, well, you can't be mad at me because I didn't mean to step on your toes. You got to take about accountability.
Yeah.
Be like, as much as my intentions were good, I still ended up hurting you, stepping on your toes metaphorically. And I want to make amends for it. I want to do right by you in the future. I want to clarify our agreements and hold each other to stick to them. And I want to earn your trust back so that in the future, if we explore with other people, either together or apart, and I celebrate you guys taking this journey into non-monogamy, it's hard. And here's your first big stumble, maybe.
Yeah.
So to build a really healthy and solid relationship going forward, have that conversation about all those things with him and be able to show your trust so he doesn't worry that if you play together separately in the future, you're just going to go do your thing with no condoms and veer off course from the agreements you've made, that's very emotionally threatening and mm-hmm. destabilizes the relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. While you can't unfuck that person, you can learn from this whole situation.
Yes.
And so, and also, I think it's also fair to say that it's not fair for him to put all the blame on you.
Yeah.
Because this is a group, you know, in a sense, yes, there are things you can be accountable for, but there's other things he can be accountable for as well, including, and not limited to, not communicating that need of not using condoms, or like what protection looks like, what the parameters of that engagement were going to be. And so it sounds like there's just a conversation on both sides. And if that's something, and, you know, maybe he thought, oh, this could be really hot, and then it turned out very differently, because, yeah, sometimes that can be a very emotionally charged experience of, like, having your partner, especially if you're new to this, having your partner, you know, not watching your partner have sex with someone else, that can either leave you to have a lot of, like, a compersion where you feel really excited and turned on for it, like a sexual compersion, or you might be like feel like a sinking ship because you're like, you know, that's monogamy, like, programming right there, like, oh fuck, my partner is fucking someone else, and
it's super triggering.
Yeah. And so that can take time to work through. Sometimes they may be, and that could also be something for your partner to speak to, saying, that was a lot, and I kind of need, like, I like to work on us for a bit before we go into that again.
Yes.
And so there's, I had a while ago, I had somewhat of a similar situation, but it was more like my partner and I were at the time were, I would say, never re-up whenever it's like 2 a.m.
Oh,
on
no.
any sort of substance.
Oh, no.
And unfortunately, it was a situation, I mean, it could have gone worse, but there was a couple who ultimately, we were way too high for us to really consent to anything.
Oh, no.
And I think it was, so yeah, it could have been worse, but still, like, looking back at it, and my partner, you know, it was rough to watch my partner have sex with another person, but it was not like a, there was consent, like, there was, we agreed in the situation, but it was, it kind of felt like this other person just wanted to get their rocks off. Like, it wasn't, it just felt like it was a whole creepy situation having their roommates were watching while it was all happening. Living, like, it was a fucking mess.
Whoa.
But that being said, in this whole situation, I experienced that, you know, and this was like my first foursome. And also, like, not starting to, but not fully opening up at that time. So watching my partner have sex with someone else was a lot to process at that time. We ultimately did work through it, and it was a learning experience for both of us. And I think also, like, shame on the people who were, like, seeing a bunch of high kids at a rave and offering, giving more drugs to them. And so that was like, that's a little sketchy. So that being said, in any situation, just talk to your partner, tell them how you feel, and, you know, make sure when you have all those agreements, then at least you know how to support each other. And if you need to have a safe word or some way to say, hey, like, I'm kind of having a rough time. Can I meet you outside while you finish, or, you know, whatever the case is. So figure out a backup plan. So if things do go sour or if something's really triggering for the other person. So have an agreement, talk about it later, make sure to have a plan and talk about it later. And then whatever, like, reaffirm, you know, way to, like, you can validate your partner, say, hey, like, just cause I had sex with this person doesn't mean I'm willing to leave you. And so help your partner feel supported even when they're struggling with that.
Yeah. Put those repair actions into place. Find out what your partner needs from you to feel safe and loved and important to you and can trust you, and try to put those into action and move forward together. Yeah. It's a wound, but you guys can totally heal from it and create an awesome relationship going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Good luck. We're rooting for you.
Yeah. We're doing it again, folks. We're running another raffle, and the prize is a free coaching session with us, your hosts. This is a chance for you to get personalized feedback, perspective, and advice on any relationship-related topic you want to talk about. To enter the raffle, all you have to do is share our podcast as a post on Facebook or Instagram and just tag our account too so we know you entered. Don't delay, as the raffle closes on September 7th. All right, question number three comes from Trey, who's 37, and he writes, this is something that happened to me before the pandemic, but I could still use your perspective on it. I've been dating a guy, we'll call him Brian, for about 3 months, and I was really confused about something that happened one weekend. He's in an open marriage, and while I tried dating both him and his husband at first, I just wasn't into his husband, and we decided to continue being friends while I dated Brian. Brian is also pursuing another guy, we'll call him James. I've been fine with this since I consider myself single and open to dating multiple people and am allowing others to do the same. And I make a point to communicate this to everyone, I get involved with. Last weekend, James hosted a small potluck and Brian was invited too. The way he described it sounded like a date, like, will you go with me to this potluck? This friend group of mine is really cool and I think you have a lot in common with them. We might all go out dancing afterwards too. I eagerly accepted this invitation because it felt like he was finally excited to start introducing me to his friends more. I know he was really close to this friends group, so I brought some homemade dishes to share and made a solid effort to chat with a lot of people there. Brian is a social butterfly and everyone loves him, so he was pretty busy talking to other people, but would occasionally come over to touch me and check in. When we all went out to the club, Brian barely hung with me and was dancing a lot with James. Now, to be clear, I'm totally fine with him dating James, but I just felt like a third wheel. I hadn't yet been in a situation where he was openly flirting and dancing with James, and I felt pretty ignored. He ended up going home with James around 1 a.m. and didn't even say goodbye to me. I made my own fun, of course, while I was there, but it definitely was not the kind of evening I had in mind. Was this not a date? Did I miss something here?
Oh,
that's a date inception right there. There was a date within a date.
Fuck.
That he didn't even know.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Trey. You sound so conscientious. And like, I love that you communicate to people your expectations and what you're okay with them. And I don't know. Brian sounds a little flighty. Like maybe this butterfly is pulled by the exciting winds of the moment or is just really taken by James and is like cannot pull himself away from James when he's in his presence, even though you're there. And Brian may be super excited about dating you too, but might have just like neglected you. I don't think there is a malicious thing here. It's not like Brian was like, ha, 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 I'll invite Trey to a potluck and then ditch him for James. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think he was plotting, but you know, maybe got a little wrapped up and just deprioritized you. And try to look at the greater relationship and see if this has happened in other ways before. Have you felt deprioritized by Brian in other ways? And if so, you may have to call this to his attention and say, hey, I'm wanting a different kind of relationship with you. I'm not just here for when it's convenient for you. I want to be here because you want me and you're going to give me attention and like interact with me in an egalitarian, reciprocal way. And so if you're not getting that repeatedly, you may not want to continue dating Brian, but we can't make those decisions for you. And we can't like extrapolate on the podcast what's going on in your greater relationship as much as, you know, we like to think we can.
Yeah.
So have a talk with Brian and be like, hey, so maybe I misinterpreted something, but I saw that as a date evening and on what I would consider a date, I expect like attention from the person who invited me and like some companionship throughout the evening. But man, I just felt ignored by you the whole time and just kind of ditched, deprioritized. And in my world, those are rude behaviors. And like, I want to give you the benefit of the doubt. Maybe you didn't mean to. Maybe you just got really swept away and forgot to communicate stuff with me. But, you know, in the future, could you do that? And also, can you tell me your experience of the night? Right.
Beautiful. Yes. I 100% agree. If that communication, I think calling that out and just sharing your experience that you felt bummed that you didn't get to see them.
Yeah.
I'd be curious to ask them like, well, when you invite me to something, what does that imply?
Yeah.
Does that mean that's a date? Because I knew someone who had this experience where they would be invited to something, but they found out that it was actually an intention. This is crazy now I'm talking about this, that they thought it was a date, but then went on, and it turns out the person that invited them was actually trying to meet other people there.
Oh.
And was not so low key hanging out with them and then trying to hook up with one of those people.
Whoa. They're like a wingman instead of the date.
I wouldn't barely call it wingman. No. It was more like I'm just trying to gauge who I'm going to have more fun with and then choose one person and then go one way or another. Or like, see, if this doesn't go well, I have you to fall back on or something.
Oh, God, no, no.
Yeah. Yeah, not no bueno. That's fucked up. But anyway, that being said, don't know if that's what's going on here, but I think asking what the expectations are, like, okay, if you're inviting me to something, what does that mean? Does that look like we are spending time together? Or are you inviting me to a social event where there's other people? And that means that I want you there, but I'm not attached to having or being with any one person that evening. Mm-hmm. So my evening, I want you to be a part of the group, but I'm not ending the night with you particularly. I'm not committing to anything.
Right.
Which that could be a red flag depending on how that person is with their relationships. Like, you know, like the example I gave, it seemed like that was a pattern of the other person was not, they weren't really considering the person they were inviting to these things. Mm. It was more like a way for them to get connected with other people.
Damn.
Yeah. Not, yeah. I've got a lot of problems with that.
Let's talk after the show. Yeah. Tell me more.
And the other piece that I would say that's important to mention is, yeah, just setting the expectations before you go together. Oh, okay. Thank you for inviting me to your thing, to this event. Mm-hmm. What does that look like as far as us together? Mm-hmm. You know, am I just kind of going in and, or can we spend the night together? So make agreements ahead of time. If someone were to invite me to something, I would assume it was a date too. So yeah. I don't think there's anything wrong with your line of thinking, Trey. I think that was like, this is pretty clean. I would feel a bit like, that kind of didn't really feel that great because I was invited to this thing, but maybe they invited a lot of other people to this. I don't know what all the stipulations were. Yeah. Maybe that person sees it. Well, when I invite someone, it's that I want you to be there because I want your presence, but I don't necessarily am committing to anything. Mm-hmm. And that's good to know. That's always good information. Sometimes you need to have those crystal clear expectations set ahead of time. And for some people, that's the case. And sometimes they may tell you, hey, so I'm inviting you, but I want to let you know that I might stay in the night with James, or I'm not sure that I'll spend the night with you. And it's not because I don't want to spend the night with you, but it's because I kind of want to be a fleety social butterfly. Mm-hmm. Perfect. I know how to set my expectations for the night.
Yeah.
And then I know that if you're going to go do your thing, then I won't take it personally. Mm-hmm. If only people would have that kind of wherewithal. So.
Just copy and paste that conversation, guys. Try it on.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry this happened to you, Trey. It sounds like such a disappointment, and you have every right to feel those feelings, you know, and when you express them, try to just talk about, here's how I felt because of what happened, but I'm not blaming you for it, instead of like, you ditched me, you abandoned me, you're an asshole, right? Mm-hmm. Just being like, here's how I felt when this happened, here's what my expectations were, what's your story, what can we do going forward so that this doesn't happen again?
Mm-hmm. Was there like a theme song for Inception? I just wanted to be like, I was going to hum the theme song, but like, I don't know it.
So. I don't know, man. Okay.
All right. Anyway.
We hope none of you fall into a dateception in the future. All right. And our last question today comes from Mila, who is 30. Mila writes, I've been dating my girlfriend, quote unquote, Sarah, for 5 years, and overall, it's been going great. She's 4 years younger than me, and when we first met, she was just getting on her feet in the world, and even though I was in grad school, I didn't want my more stable financial situation to get in the way of us having fun together. She comes from a family that isn't well off, but she's so adventurous and wanted to participate in all the events and travels I have in my life, so I offered to lend her the money to get her there. She was working part-time waitressing, so she had some income and enough flexibility to join me on adventures. She agreed she'd pay me back as soon as she got her next paycheck. This worked out for a few things we went to, but eventually she started delaying more and more, with usually valid but vague excuses. We'd go on a trip and track our expenses, and she'd kind of, quote, add it to her tab. I was really busy with school and didn't like nagging her, and we were just so in love, it always seemed to drag down the energy when I brought it up. I moved to a new town, and she came with me, moving into an apartment together. And that whole process brought new expenses with it, But she got a new job there quickly and made a few small payments, so I thought this would all work itself out eventually. Plus, I hate making a relationship all about money and obligations as if it's totally transactional. I'm really proud of how equal our relationship has been so far overall and how we've supported each other through a few big life transitions and how we've been able to be non-monogamous the whole time too. Not that either of us actually act on it ever anyways. So I'm embarrassed to say at this point she owes me around $8,000, which to both of us is a lot. I never intended for it to get that high, and I hate feeling like a debt collector to my own girlfriend, the love of my life. Some of those expenses I could have just let go as a gift, but honestly, I can't afford to pay for all this stuff for her from the start, as much as I want to help build a life for her that's more financially stable and prosperous than she's previously known. That just wasn't our agreement. I've tried bringing this up in so many ways, but she snaps at me or rolls her eyes or makes more empty promises. I just want her to agree to some kind of repayment plan or structure or something so I can feel reassured I'll eventually get repaid. I just want to get this out of the way of our future and return to a clean baseline because this is a growing rift between us, and I'm sure she hates having it hang over her head constantly. Due to her lack of a degree, her work options are fairly limited, but I honestly believe she's incredibly talented and resourceful and has a future in a couple industries she dabbles in, mostly as a creative hobby so far. What can I do? If I just forgive the whole debt, I feel like I'd be letting her take advantage of me, and she can just get away with making all those empty promises. But I want to show her I trust her because I want to build a future with her, and I genuinely think she meant to fulfill those promises when she made them. Do I take her to court? We don't have many receipts, but I do have emails where she agreed that my record keeping was correct. I just think that would ruin us permanently. I'm starting to worry this is a pattern she would continue going forward in our lives.
Oh, Mila, that's such a rough situation to be in. And I totally get that experience when it comes to money and relationships. Mm. It's really shitty to have to have those conversations, because when you are giving or offering some kind of support financially, especially, we want to come from a place of like, hey, I have excess, I want to be able to help this person. Mm-hmm. But we also want to be mindful because you have to take care of yourself. And unless there's an agreement that I don't want you to pay it back, we kind of hope that the other person like gets like, hey, if you're helping me out, that I would like you to just, you know, kind of like at your own leisure or whatever, and hopefully it's communicated to some level, mm-hmm. you'll pay it back. Mm-hmm. But whenever it's not, it kind of feels like a point of contention, resentment. I've had that with some friends where it's like, oh yeah, bro, I got you, I'll pay you back. And they never fucking do.
Oh, fuck.
And it's like, look, if you're not going to, that's fine. I just want, just be honest with me. Don't lie to me in my face every single mm-hmm. time you see me when it's been months, years. So at oh, the some God. Point, it's, so I think, I don't know if it's worth going to court, but I think if we're going to do this, there can be more of a firm way to handle this. I think in general, if we are lending or gifting money to anyone that's a partner, we need to define the terms. So a lot of the communication of like, okay, how much is lending? What you expect in return? Mm-hmm. And timeline. Mm-hmm. And then just request like, if that is not agreeable or if that changes in any way or shape or form, let's communicate so we can renegotiate. So that way it's not like, this isn't school where you just like tell your teacher the day that your exams, your papers due, like, oh, I'm sorry, like my dog ate it or whatever BS yeah. excuse you try to pull up. That this isn't that. This is a romantic connection you have with someone that you're building trust and sounds like a life with, and you want to respect that person, and things do happen. So if they're like, hey, I don't think I can meet the agreement, can we negotiate smaller payments over a longer period of time mm-hmm. as long as it's consistent? Or like, can I have a 2-month buffer so I can save some money, can I focus on other things? Whatever it is, as long as there's communication, it's easier to work with. But when there's no communication and you're like, hey, so what's going on with it?
Yeah.
Then it comes off, then it just feels like the other person isn't really respecting what you were giving. And there's no expectation here, but more like, hey, this was a big ask or like something mm-hmm. that was I'm giving of myself. And at the very least, I just want to know that you know, if you're going to or not going to pay it, that's fine. Mm-hmm. I just need communication around it.
Yeah.
So I know how to handle this going forward, whether that means, hey, I can't, like if you're not able to, then that's fine. Like I need a, I won't be able to offer any financial assistance in any form because I need to take care of myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so that way it's like a boundary setting a hard line right there.
Yeah. I hope, Mila, that so far since this started getting to a breaking point for you, you have stopped lending additional monies to Sarah, because hopefully you've learned by the pattern of her behavior thus far that she will not pay you back on a schedule that works for you or with any transparency and structure to the plan. And she will make small payments whenever she feels like it, and you have no guarantee you'll get it all back. So are those conditions you want to continue to lend someone money? Hopefully not. Hopefully you've learned that this person is not reliable in the way you had hoped they would be, and you've stopped lending additional money. So if you are still lending, please stop. You're just bleeding out at this point and exacerbating a growing problem. I'm sure if this was like $50 or $100 between people, it's really easy for a lot of people in relationships to kind of forgive that. Be like, well, you know, like just pay for dinner next time we go out or something like that. It's usually easy to sort of forgive small bits like that, as long as there's not some overarching constant pattern. But this has grown into a very big amount. I think most people in the country don't take $8,000 lightly.
Right. Yeah.
I would love someone to just fucking hand me $8,000. That would make quite a difference in my life. Yeah,
right.
And if someone were to take $8,000 from me, that would make quite a difference in my life.
Yes.
So, I don't want to minimize what you're going through here by any means. It's significant. And I'm sure Sarah knows this on some level, but maybe she's very uncomfortable facing it and talking about it. Maybe there's a lot of shame and embarrassment where she's like, ah, fuck, I shouldn't have gotten myself into this situation where I owe so much to someone I'm dating. Like maybe she's really embarrassed about that. And that's why she's having trouble talking about it. And maybe similarly, that may be why you've had trouble really putting your foot down about it, because you're not standing up for what you're owed, the respect you deserve, upholding, you know, like holding accountable your partner for their end of the bargain that they should be upholding. So I know it's uncomfortable to feel like a debt collector, but to be honest, you got yourself into this situation.
Mm-hmm.
I think you've been permissive with your partner for too long under the guise of being loving. And I'm sure being generous feels good. I think maybe playing the savior role feels a little good, mm-hmm. right? Because you're important, you're helping, you're doing a generous, wonderful, loving thing. And a lot of people show their love through money, whether it's gifts or loans or whatever. And it just didn't work out this time. Agreements weren't clear from the start. And your partner isn't doing a great job of holding themselves accountable or responding to you when you request accountability. So I don't know how far the repayments have come, like what percentage of the total amount has been repaid, but you may have to make a decision here and let Sarah know that, like, hey, I want to build a life with you, and right now I feel like I can't trust you with money, and that makes me sad, and I want to trust you. I like want to believe you're capable of doing better. So can you either show me this, or can we wipe the slate clean? You know, like, if you're willing to just forgive the debt, know that she may in the future still be irresponsible with money and rack up debt in other ways with you. And if you choose to break off this relationship for the financial or other reasons, you may have to just chalk this up to a lesson that you paid the universe thousands of dollars to learn.
Yeah, that's valid. Yeah, I think most people don't know that their boundaries have been crossed, especially with money, until it's like way the fuck past
it.
And, you know, we learned it the hard way. So, you know, either going forward or for future reference or for anyone who is in a similar experience, I think having the rough plan for your money, and this is going to sound super cold and clinical, but you need a COAA, you know, cover your ass, because you only have so many resources. And in case things don't work out with a partner, you want to make sure that you're not just getting run over.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this agreement kind of helps keep a legal accountability if they aren't, you know, so it's bound more than just like by word, by action. Hopefully it doesn't come to having to exercise this, but hear me out on this. So if you, let's say you do establish a plan with Sarah or with other partner, whatever the case is. Then put this agreement into writing and have them sign a promissory note. Mm-hmm. So, which you can do, you can use something like a LegalZoom. Hey, we're looking for sponsors. LegalZoom. They offer promissory notes, and that will allow you both to be on the same page, and this will help you have an agreement going forward. So it gives you peace of mind, and in case anything happens with the relationship, you have a legal right to collect what they owe you, regardless of your status. So if your partner refuses to sign the note, that's a huge fucking red flag.
Mm.
In either case, where they do or don't sign it, do not lend a single dollar to them. Mm-hmm. And if they threaten to leave, then, you know, like, stand firm. That's a boundary. And you're not the some, like, honey fund that's just going to be paying endless amounts of money. You do not agree. Unless this is an agreement for, like, a sugar mommy, sugar daddy, sugar whatever, sugar baby arrangement. Mm-hmm. Unless that's explicitly agreed upon, then there shouldn't be an expectation of, like, you just covering all the bills.
Exactly. So,
ultimately, if they see this as some sort of breach in a relationship, just remember that there's already a breach in the relationship on your end, and then you're uncomfortable with what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So the promissory notes or some other legal agreements. I don't know all the stipulations because I'm not a legal advisor. Do not listen to me for any legal advice. Go online for that. Then that will give you some protection.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that probably the sooner you do that, the better. So that way, if things continue to go south, or if that becomes kind of a point of contention for you and the relationship ends, then you have a legal right to collecting the rest of the money that you're owed. If that doesn't work out, then know that do that with any other, if you're going to any sort of similar agreement with any future partners, especially when I say consider a sum of money that is not easily replaceable or puts you out significantly or enough where it's a, you know, you have a skip in your heartbeat or something, then get that agreement written and get that kind of like arranged first and foremost. So that way you're all on the same page. I think it's shit when we have to like involve a legal process when it comes to interrelational things, but there are some cases where this can help whenever people aren't willing to be accountable. And I don't know whether what your partner's experience is. She might be experiencing the shame. She might be experiencing some other financial turmoil and feels like they're letting you down. I don't know their situation. Mm-hmm. But if they're not communicating and they're not and continually not honoring your boundary and respect around like your finances, then it's time for you to take action.
Yeah.
In some form.
Yeah, I think through the repeated actions of lending and non-repayment, Mila has learned, or your girlfriend Sarah has learned that she can get away with not paying you back right away, and there aren't really serious consequences. And unfortunately, yeah, through your actions and not holding her accountable, she's been able to sort of take advantage of you. And I'm not saying she necessarily did so intentionally. Maybe she just sort of realized, like, apparently there's no deadlines here. I'll get around to it eventually. And, like, maybe she's well-intended but lazy and negligent, potentially. And just keep in mind that money has a different symbolism and significance and meaning to different people. So to some people, they may have grown up in a situation that taught them that, you know, what's money between lovers? Like, you know, I'll lend you a little here, you'll lend me some there, and it all works out. Or maybe I did some favors non-monetarily for you, and so you should consider that repayment. Or, you know, let's not let this come between us. And then other people are like, even if they lend you a small amount and you don't pay it back within a tight timeline, they'll consider that a serious betrayal. So it's really relative along a big spectrum for people. And it sounds like you guys had different views of what money meant to you. And therefore, you need to reconcile that meaning and come to some kind of conclusion. You can't let this hang over your heads the rest of your relationships or the rest of your lives.
Yeah. Absolutely. Address it. Nip in the bud. Deal with that shit now. Mm-hmm. Get written agreements or have some kind of firm, hard plan, and, you know, hopefully you two can sort this out.
Yeah.
This is a real sore spot with relationships, and I know I've been on, I think, feel like both sides of that.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, like, if I'm borrowing, or if there's any situation where I'm borrowing money or giving money from someone, then I want to make sure that I show respect and honor them because they don't have to do this for me. They don't have to help me out.
True.
And the fact that they're able to, then I want to make sure that that's being honored and respected. Because that also gives opportunity. If I'm really in a bind, you know, that's not usually something that occurs for me, but if I'm ever in that position, then there's like a willingness to get that support later. Mm-hmm. But if you're kind of skirting on your bill and then here comes a time where you really need it, whereas the other time was kind of like, it'd be nice, then no one's going to come when you cry wolf.
Yes. Good point. Well, I know this is a really tough one, but good luck, Mila. Yeah.
So on to happier subjects. We're going to tell you how to handle rejection.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this. Why do we want you to be able to handle rejection? I think this is similar to how to have a good breakup.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to our interpersonal relations and communications, I think we want to just be all super, you know, posi culture. Like, everything's going to be great. Every ask gets a yes.
Mm.
And the person that you're just fawning over is just going to be like, absolutely, I've always wanted to date you. And all these, like, ridiculous things that we just want. Where the first job you applied, the one that you really wanted, you'll get.
Mm.
And that is just not the world we live in.
Yep.
We have to also, I think there's a way that we can frame our rejection, because we look at it, I think, generally as a failure.
Mm-hmm.
There's something wrong with us. Mm-hmm. Something wrong with me. There's something about who I am or how I'm being that caused this rejection.
Yeah.
I'm broken. I'm unfixable. You know, you can start spiraling down this hole. But rejection doesn't always look like that. Like, rejection can look like, there's so many other factors to consider when it comes to rejection. And it doesn't necessarily imply a fault in your character or you.
Mm-hmm.
As much as we may feel it is, because that's the easiest thing to blame is like, well, I'm fucked up, or I'm not good enough.
Yeah. Rejection always feels personal.
Yeah. But that's like, that's trauma talking, you know?
Mm-hmm. So, I want to... Sorry, go ahead.
All right, I've lost it. Go ahead.
I would like us to try to expand our definition of rejection.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think at first we assume rejection is just the thing that happens when we go up to someone in a bar who we think are cute and we're like, hey, so, and we give a shitty pickup line and they're like, not interested. And that's rejection, right? Or, you know, like messaging someone on a dating app and asking them on the date and they're like, no thanks, I don't think we're a match. And we're like, oh, rejection.
If you get the message.
Oh, God. But I think if we reframe or expand our definition of rejection, then reframing these many types of disappointments as rejections helps us to process the true nature of those emotions and helps us to integrate the information or either communicate our needs or recalibrate our expectations. So here's some examples of what I would consider technically rejection, but we may not consider at first glance to be rejection. So failure, disappointment, anytime we reach out for something and don't get it, such as acceptance, approval, good opinions about yourself, reciprocated attraction.
Consent.
Uh-huh. Too. Uh-huh. Yeah. Or just, yeah, anytime our expectations are not met. And I think there might be some, you know, childhood roots to this. Like when you're a baby, all your needs get met, all your expectations. Like, I want this, it's given to you. I need that, it's given to you. And so we experience connectedness and worthiness based on every time we request a thing, we get it. We request a thing, we get it. Yeah. As we age, we start requesting things and we don't get it. And we're like, excuse me?
The fuck do you think I am?
I suddenly understand toddlers so much more right now. Oh, my God. Because they're experiencing no. And no is interpreted as separation, as I am not one with the giver, my mother, my parent, my father anymore. Mm. And therefore, I have been reinforced thus far with the giving of love makes me feel loved and worthy and special and needed and important. And then when I don't get the thing, then ergo, I am not loved. I am not important. I am not worthy. Right. And we carry this wound the rest of our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. That's that's it.
So true. So let's say your partner doesn't want to accompany you to an important event. They turn you down for that. They don't laugh at your joke, or they don't like the meal you cooked, or they forget your birthday or anniversary, or your partner expresses not the exact amount of enthusiasm that you expected for a gift you gave them, or they don't text you back within a time frame that means something to you. These are all miniature rejections. And when we feel hurt by something that happens, I don't think we label it right off the bat as a rejection, and we should.
Hmm. Yeah, and those can all look like very directed towards you, mm-hmm. like we were saying earlier. But rejection just looks like it's just a no to the request.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a no to you.
Right.
And that's super important to delineate. So when you, that shitty pickup line didn't work, or that new date was like, you know, I really don't want to go to that technical death metal show that you're inviting to because I don't even know what that's about. Then rather than like saying, oh, something wrong with me, I always get that rejection when I ask about the metal show or something. Then
it's a big ask for a lot of people, Fernando.
I usually filter out like, so are you into metal? And I'll filter before I ask.
That's true.
And sometimes they're like, yeah, I'll go. And they're like, oh. Mm-hmm. But for the few people who get it, yes.
Yeah.
It's like learning how to, like, I would say just getting thicker skin, but learning to say, okay, thank you. You know, I appreciate your honesty. Mm. I think we can look at it as a gift rather than something to be afraid of. It's similar to how you can relate to how we look at success and failure, where just when you see someone's success, what you don't see is all the failure that happened up to that point.
Mm-hmm.
So, and same with like dating, an example of dating of you may have a lot of no's or rejections, but that doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with you,
mm-hmm.
you know, because that also, or an acceptance has to be a yes from both people,
yeah,
not from one person. So a yes for you doesn't necessarily mean it's a yes from them,
mm-hmm.
whether they're like, you know, I'm not really, I'm not looking, I'm dating someone, or I'm not, I don't know, or not, I'm not really feeling this,
yeah.
whatever the case is. But then what you don't see is how many, whenever that there's a finally a person's like, yeah, like I think we're, you know, there's a connection here, that we don't always see all the steps that got us to that that destination.
Mm-hmm.
And we just have to look at it as part of the journey. And so when it comes to how we handle rejection, it's just, remember, it's just not a way that this is not reflecting on you.
Mm-hmm.
So be able to, I think it's like listening to what is being said.
Yeah.
They never said, fuck you. Like, you didn't,
right.
I'm rejecting you as a person, as your whole being. Get out of my yeah. sight. God, I hope no one ever said that to you. But what it is saying is like, no, I decline your request, but thank, you know, and maybe it was implied thank you. Mm-hmm. Maybe they didn't say thank you. I don't know. Just hear it as that and then move on.
Mm-hmm.
That can be hard sometimes because, yeah, like you said, we're growing up. We have so many yeses, and then that no, and especially a series of like rejections can feel almost like a, you know, hit our ego a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, your ego is going to get poked by rejection in its many, many forms. And being conscious of that and then speaking to your ego about it might help. So, you know, it's easy to interpret rejection, to receive it as a judgment about your worthiness or commentary about you as a person. But remember, like, listen to your internal reaction or story that you tell when you receive the rejection. Your partner doesn't want to have sex with you tonight. Oh, I'm not attractive anymore to you. Or your partner doesn't like your cooking, that one meal tonight, then like, oh, my partner doesn't like my cooking, I'm a terrible cook. Or your partner doesn't like the gift that you gave to them, like, oh, did I not, you know, I'm bad at selecting things they would like, you know? So you're drawing these disproportionate conclusions about yourself because it's your ego, right? Like getting bruised and being like, ow, I'm hurt.
Yeah. Like maybe you just like really suck at making pad thai, but you make a bomb ass, I don't know, curry or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Don't know how that's possible. You should be able to do both equally well. Or maybe they're like, you know, I'm not feeling sex today, but ask me tomorrow morning. So.
Right. Yeah, it's not necessarily about you. And remember that overreacting or taking it personally and not healing or dwelling on that wound will hinder your future possibilities. So like with dating, you got to try a lot of different puzzle pieces before you find the one that fits. But if you like are woe is me about the one puzzle piece who rejected you and it hurt so bad, you won't go out and seek the right puzzle piece anymore. Yeah. You're going to hold yourself back. So, you know, getting back up on your feet and being kind to yourself, not like, oh, I should grow a thicker skin and not feel this feeling anymore. Like, no, feel the feeling. It's okay. Yeah. Rejection hurts. And you can sit there and be like, ow. Yeah. But it's ow and then what comes next, right?
And consider, too, that there are some things that the particular thing that you're kind of like extending yourself out for, there's also, we have to assess what are the chances of like success rate, if you will. Mm-hmm. So imagine like a job you're applying for. What if only 2%, 1% of people apply get the job? So it may not even be about how good or how over or underqualified you are.
Right.
This is about luck of the draw.
Just know the odds that are already you're going up against.
Yeah. It could be, you know, that person that you went up to say is the bar, like, they could be, they may not be available. Mm-hmm. They may just be like there because they want to enjoy their time. They could also be like, you know, I only date people who are like over 6 feet tall. Or
right, who knows?
or like, you know, if you don't have an accent, I don't even want to deal with you kind of thing. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Whatever the stipulation is, it doesn't you don't have to sit here and try to mold yourself to fit every situation. Just assess that you may not the odds may just be acting against your favor. It doesn't mean you shouldn't try. Mm-hmm. It just means just know what you're going up against. Mm-hmm.
Keeps it into perspective.
Yeah. And just, you know, always, I think also helps to keep the pots in the oven.
What are they called? Irons in the fire.
Thank you. Gosh, I'm so good at remembering these things. And yeah, so that way, if you're applying to a job and you're like really set on that one job and it falls through, don't just like throw your hands up and say, fuck it. I don't know, like...
I'm not qualified for anything.
Yeah, exactly. Like, no, you didn't work. That job didn't work. That particular job didn't work out. And there are many other opportunities. So go apply for like 5 other places. And whoever's going to be the best offer, take it. Mm-hmm. If you're on any dating apps and websites, because this is primarily focused around relationships, then you might have to message a bunch of people. Mm-hmm. And you may not get responses. You may get some matches. You may... Whatever the case is. Just don't set it all on one person. Mm-hmm. You may get lucky and that person might want to like connect. You may not get any sort of response back. And like, okay, well then time to move on to the, you know, and see where it goes from there.
Right. But, it's like betting all your money on one horse, right? Yeah. Like keep your mind open to other possibilities. And if you're already in a relationship, this doesn't apply, right? Like if you're committed to one person, you're in this relationship, it's not like, oh, keep my mind open. I can date other people if this person doesn't give me the approval I need or if they reject me too much. But I think the thing to do in that situation would be source your self-esteem from elsewhere, not just your partner's approval. So they may give you a little rejection like, oh, I didn't like the food or no, I don't really want to go on that hike with you. It will sting less if you have other friends who want to go on the hike with you or, you know that you're a talented person in other realms. So it's okay to suck at a few things in life. Everyone does.
You can always ask for feedback. Okay. Well, what didn't you like about the pad thai?
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so then you're like, well, and they're like, actually, I don't like pad thai. It's like, oh, well, shit. That explains it. Or they can give you can, and then you maybe offer like, hey, like if I make it again, would you be willing to try it? And so... You know, there, and depending on the circumstances, there may be some sort of like level of negotiation there.
Mm-hmm. And you can ask your partner to help cushion the blow if they're going to reject you with something. Like, so for example, an ex of mine gave me a gift that he made and put a lot of time into. And I didn't use it very often just for a variety of reasons, not because it wasn't worth it. It was a really awesome thing, but I rarely used it. And he felt very hurt and rejected by this. And held it against me a lot. And I didn't know how to solve this. And I tried to say, like, I really appreciate that you made it. I just don't have as much use for it as I thought I did. I tried to explain the situation, but I know he was still bruised about it. Yeah. So, like, if your partner might reject you about something, you could say, like, hey, hun, in the future, can you, like, thank me or compliment my effort in the same breath as your rejection of the thing I did? Like, no, I really don't feel like hiking with you this Saturday. But you know, Wednesday, I would really love to have a time together where we cook dinner, right? Yeah. So like, let them know, like, hey, I still love and want you, and you're still important to me. I just don't want to do this one thing with you. Yeah. And that way they can like cushion the impact of yes. something they didn't want to, that they are rejecting of you, that they can't provide to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh, gift giving is such a hard thing, especially yeah. when you have people who are a little removed from how to give gifts, and they give you a thing, you're like, I don't. Like I had a client of mine make a scarf for me. It's like really cool, but like I don't fucking wear scarves.
Oh.
So don't give me scarves.
Right.
And she's like, oh, have you been wearing it? I'm like, and I think I wore it like once or twice. Yeah. And they're like, well, I never see you wear it. It's like, oh, you know, I just don't always wear scarves. Oh. Like, so it was easier to explain whenever I lost it. I don't know how I lost it. It's like, I don't know what happened to it. But I wouldn't say just go losing all your gifts.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think if you're going to give a gift to someone, maybe just like before you give the gift, ask them, what are some gifts you like? Give mm-hmm. it, give yourself like a buffer of like several months. So that way by the time they get the gift, they'll forget you yeah. even asked. Life tip right there.
Ooh, clever. another tip I want to give is to pay attention to your inner critic. When you receive rejection from someone, challenge the judgments and negativity that your inner critic brings up to you. Try to talk to your critic like it's a separate entity. You know, if your critic's like, yeah, that chick turned you down, like you must not be that attractive and you're not very suave, you're pretty awkward, da da da. You can be like, hey, I don't think so. I have unique traits that are worthy of attention and admiration that if I just find the right person, they'll appreciate, right? Oh. Like have a debate with that. Side of you and challenge it and then talk to yourself with kindness and lovingly and with forgiveness, right? Like if your friend got rejected by somebody at the bar, like someone you cared about and they're really hurt and they're feeling down on themselves and their attractiveness, you wouldn't say to them like, yep, guess you're just not attractive and you know, jeez, yeah. you're not worthy of love and you'll be alone forever. Right? Like, so why do we talk to ourselves that way if we wouldn't say that to someone we loved right. and cared about? So be conscious of your inner talk there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mindfulness will go a long way
yes.
in these sort of situations. Like mindfulness, whether it's, you know, I think meditation would be also really like mindfulness meditation. Ooh. It's like taking a regular practice. And a lot, it seems like whenever one, and you can just go like find apps to do guided meditations. Highly recommend that because if you're, unless you're experienced or have the know-how to where to start, meditating on your own can be difficult. And there's it's okay to have guided. I think it's a great yeah. external resource, but
it's a little intimidating sometimes.
Yeah. I've been doing that lately because I'm like, you know, my own practice has been shit, but whenever I do it guided, it's like I feel a little more focused and feels like it's working.
Yeah.
Do what I'm trying to do what I can. But that sort of self-investment can help you kind of detach from like, okay, I hear what you're saying. Thank
mm-hmm.
you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a gift rather than a an earth-shattering like realization that I'm not lovable and unacceptable or whatever the
right?
case is.
Yeah. Oh, don't let yourself spiral. Embrace your own individuality. Not everyone is going to automatically see you for the unique rainbow sparkle that you are. And like,
and fuck them if they don't.
Yeah, exactly. They may not appreciate the things that make you unique right off the bat. And you have to just tell yourself, I am a unique rainbow sparkle and not everyone can see it right away. And I just have to find the people who do see that side of me and appreciate that for me.
Yes.
Yep.
Yes.
Right. Yes. Like your worthiness does not come from external sources like other people's approval or attraction, desire or applause or attention. And it's so hard to detach yourself from those things because they're kind of a drug. They feel good to get it.
Yeah.
But that's your ego gobbling all that up. That's not like true fulfillment. The true approval comes from you inside.
Yeah. And if you find that you're struggling with rejection, that I feel like that's an indicator that self, that's where we're building on that self-worth
yes.
and self-love is going to be important. Mm-hmm. So if you notice that while you're going out dating and you're just like every rejection, like just it's like a stake through the heart, like the vampire you are, then you have to take a moment and say, okay, maybe I need to take a like cool off the jets on like aggressively dating or whatever it is you're doing and start spending on time. What brings me joy? How do I invest myself?
Yeah, whether that's a hobby or like a craft or some sort of like expression through art or words, find something that fills you up and focus on you for a bit. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed, like, yeah, if I'm like off my routine when it comes to investing myself, those things do hit me harder. Ooh. In a way. And that's like an indicator for me that, like, well, I'm in the wrong place. It's like I'm looking for that external validation more than I am for my sourcing that internally.
How astute of you. Wow.
I've learned from many mistakes here. So many mistakes. We only can advocate that self-worth, looking inside, is going to help reflect out to everything else you do. So if you're dragging from that inner, the outer too much, start looking inward.
Said
the Buddha, or someone really woke like that.
The Fernando Buddha. Mic drop right there, dude.
Thanks.
It's beautiful. We love recommending books to you on this podcast, and we want to make it super easy for you to use these incredibly helpful resources in your own love life. That's why we've teamed up with Audible, which has thousands of titles of all genres, which you can listen to while driving, cleaning, cooking, or any other activity. We don't judge. If you sign up through our link, you can get one free audiobook and one free month trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/headoverfeels.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for tuning in.
To submit your question, go to our website, headoverfeelspod.com.
Also, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at headoverfeelspod.
Please subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, and review in your podcast app of choice.
See you next week.